Today is Wednesday, March 3rd, and you're listening to International Edition on the Voice of America. I am Chinedu Ofor, broadcasting from Washington, D.C. Coming up, Senate takes up COVID pandemic relief bill.
Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer says during the conference call, Biden urged the lawmakers to pass the bill and pass it soon.
Also, U.S. imposes sanctions on Russia officials.
New export restrictions on items that could be used for biological agent and chemical production, and visa restrictions.
Plus, Pope Francis to visit Iraq despite rocket attack. These stories and more are next. President Joe Biden calls for unity as the Senate readies for work on the massive pandemic relief bill. AP correspondent Tim McGuire reports.
In a conference call and a rare tweet, President Biden urges fellow Democrats in the 50-50 Senate to rally behind the $1.9 trillion COVID relief bill. Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer says during the conference call, Biden urged the lawmakers to pass the bill and pass it soon. Some moderates are wanting more narrowly focused spending on those hardest hit by the pandemic. Republican leader Mitch McConnell is following the same game plan he took against then-President Barack Obama and pushing for all his GOP colleagues to oppose the measure. Schumer says debate could start Wednesday with passage before the 14th of this month. Tim McGuire, Washington.
Merck will help its pharmaceutical competitor Johnson & Johnson make the single-shot coronavirus vaccine. President Biden made the announcement on Tuesday. VOA's White House Bureau Chief Steve Herman was in the room when the president also said he wants every American educated to receive at least one vaccine dose by the end of this month as part of the effort to get the country back to normal as quickly as possible.
President Biden, speaking in the White House State Dining Room, said the cooperation among competitors to produce more doses and other actions will speed up the timeline by 2 months to have enough vaccine to inoculate every adult American.
We're now on track to have enough vaccine supply for every adult in America by the end of May.
The president, in response to a reporter's question, said he hopes that by this time next year or sooner, things will be back to normal. Steve Herman, VOA News, at the White House.
The global COVAX vaccine distribution plan aims to deliver hundreds of millions of vaccines to low-income countries, many of them in Africa, in the coming months, top global health officials say, describing a turning point in the quest to quash the coronavirus pandemic. VOA's Anita Powell reports from Johannesburg.
The world's largest, fastest, and most ambitious vaccine drive is ramping up, the head of the World Health Organization says, with 11 million vaccine doses arriving Tuesday in Angola, Cambodia, the Democratic Republic of Congo, and Nigeria. Between now and the end of May, said WHO Chief Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus, the COVAX facility will deliver 270 million doses to 142 participating countries and economies. The global initiative was set up last April to ensure that poorer nations aren't left out of the worldwide scramble for vaccine access. The program, which is projected to cost about $11 billion, is funded by donor nations, foundations, and corporations. It is part of the Access to COVID-19 Tools Accelerator, a global collaboration that works on development and production, as well as equitable access to tests, treatments, and vaccines. Last week, the West African nation of Ghana became the first to benefit from COVAX, receiving 600,000 doses of the AstraZeneca vaccine. Among the first recipients were President Nana Akufo-Addo and his wife, Rebecca, who received their shots on national television Monday in what he said was an effort to boost public confidence in the vaccine. Akufo-Addo says he plans to have the rest of the country vaccinated by the end of the year.
The world has seen already the great value of the COVAX facility. COVID-19 is a global problem. It requires a global solution. Unless every country is protected, no country will be safe. We all fell together. Let us all rise together.
Tedros says while the vaccine deliveries are good news, he's thinking much bigger.
When the history of the pandemic is written, I believe that the ACT Accelerator and COVAX will be one of its standout successes. This is an unprecedented partnership that will not only change the course of the pandemic, but will also change the way the world responds to future health emergencies.
Officials say the next step is to bring vaccine manufacturing to Africa. Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
Israel has approved plans to offer COVID-19 vaccines to Palestinians with Israel work permits, a step a rights group said did not go far enough to safeguard Palestinians in the occupied territories. Soraya Ali of Reuters reports.
The Palestinians have received relatively few doses to date and lag far behind Israel, which has vaccinated over one-third of its population in one of the world's fastest rollouts. Now, Israel says it will offer Moderna vaccines to the roughly 130,000 Palestinians who work in Israel or its West Bank settlements. The workers have mixed feelings.
The whole world is taking the vaccine. This is a new and good step from the Israelis to vaccinate the Palestinian workers, because there is daily contact between us and the Israeli workers. So, in my opinion, this is a very good thing, and they should take it.
It'd be preferable if everyone could get vaccinated. It'd be preferable if everyone got vaccinated, because on our side, there is a vaccine. There will be a vaccine. Without the vaccine, it'll be impossible to go through checkpoints.
Omar Shakir, the Israel and Palestine director at Human Rights Watch, said that Israel was bound by international law to vaccinate Palestinians living under its effective control.
That's Soraya Ali of Reuters. The Biden administration announced sanctions Tuesday on senior Russian government officials for the poisoning of Alexei Navalny and reiterated a demand that the opposition leader be released from detention. The sanctions were not specifically directed at President Vladimir Putin or his inner circle. White House correspondent Patsy Widaskuwara has the story.
This penal colony about 100 kilometers east of Moscow is where outspoken Kremlin critic Alexei Navalny has been jailed since last month after surviving a poison attack last year. On Tuesday, the Biden administration declassified intelligence showing that Moscow orchestrated the poisoning and announced sanctions on 14 Russian entities and 7 senior members of the Russian government. White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki.
Expansion of sanctions under the Chemical and Biological Weapons Control and Warfare Elimination Act, new export restrictions on items that could be used for biological agent and chemical production, and visa restrictions.
Press Secretary Jen Psaki repeated U.S. demands for Navalny's release. The opposition leader's arrest set off nationwide street protests in Russia last month. Navalny contends his jailing is politically motivated. The U.S. sanctions were coordinated with European partners and Britain, but not specifically directed at President Vladimir Putin, oligarchs of his inner circle. Meanwhile, Moscow has already vowed to retaliate against this.
The spokesperson for the Russian government said Wednesday the new U.S. and European Union sanctions against Russia over the poisoning and subsequent jailing of opposition leader Alexei Navalny were, quote, unacceptable, unquote, and caused considerable harm to relations between the countries. In his daily briefing via call, Dmitry Peskov said the sanctions are a way for the U.S. and EU to interfere with Russian affairs. Federal Bureau of Investigations Director Christopher Wray told U.S. lawmakers on Tuesday that the January 6th attack on the U.S. Capitol by pro-Trump rioters trying to overturn Joe Biden's election victory was domestic terrorism. As VOA's congressional correspondent Catherine Gibson reports, Wray admitted the Bureau did have raw intelligence warning of violence that day.
For the first time since the January 6 riot at the U.S. Capitol, one of the nation's top law enforcement officials telling lawmakers Tuesday that riot was domestic terrorism, fueled in large part by white supremacist groups that represent a serious threat in the United States. Federal Bureau of Investigation Director Christopher Wray.
It has been the biggest chunk of our racially motivated violent extremism cases, and itself the biggest chunk of our domestic terrorism caseload overall, and the most lethality over the last decade has been from these same extremists.
In his first testimony since the attempted insurrection, Wray said the rioters came from a broad range of groups supporting white supremacy and militia violence, and that there is no evidence for allegations they were fake Trump protesters or disguised left-wing protesters.
While we're equal opportunity in looking for violent extremism of any ideology, we have not to date seen any evidence of anarchist violent extremists or people subscribing to Antifa in connection with the 6th. That doesn't mean we're not looking, and we'll continue to look, but at the moment, we have not seen that.
More than 270 people have been charged to date for their roles in that riot. And the FBI investigations are expanding, said Ray.
With more subjects being identified and charged just about every single day, the FBI is committed to seeing this through, no matter how many people it takes.
Many Republicans arguing the domestic terror threat is equaled or surpassed by left-wing extremists, such as Antifa, citing the burning of a federal courthouse in Portland, Oregon last summer. Republican Senator Ted Cruz.
In the past year, we have seen massive rioting and violence as extremists, many of them leftist extremists, took to the streets across the country.
But Democrats pushed back, arguing lawlessness accompanying some pro-racial justice demonstrations pale in comparison to violent white supremacy. Senate Judiciary Committee Chair Senator Dick Durbin.
It is not equivalent to a violent attempt to overturn the results of elections, nor is it equivalent to mass shootings targeting minority communities. This false equivalency is an insult to the brave police officers who were injured or lost their lives on January 6.
In a House hearing last week, Capitol security officials revealed they had not received a January 5th FBI bulletin warning of possible violence. Catherine Gibson, VOA News, Washington.
The Pentagon report says domestic extremist groups pose a threat to the military by infiltrating its ranks or seeking to recruit military members. The Department of Defense released the report on Tuesday, months after it was provided to Congress, which asked for an assessment of how FBI resources might help screen military recruits for extremist affiliations. Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin has made it a priority to determine the extent of extremist problems inside the military. On February 5th, he directed commanders at every level of the military to conduct a one-day, quote, stand down, unquote, by early April to discuss extremism in his ranks. Local news report says Myanmar security forces have shot and killed at least 6 people on Wednesday as authorities extend their lethal crackdown on protests against last month's coup. Police continue to fire on demonstrators even as the country's Southeast Asian neighbors are urging it to stop using force and to release ousted leader Aung San Suu Kyi. Lucy Fielder of Reuters reports.
Myanmar police opened fire and used water cannon to disperse protests against a military coup on Tuesday, as foreign ministers of neighbouring countries, ASEAN members, held talks with the junta via video call and pressed it to release ousted leader Aung San Suu Kyi and stop what Singapore called its disastrous use of lethal force. Police fired live ammunition to disperse a crowd in the northwestern town of Kale, where several people were wounded. Protesters threw things at advancing police, a witness said. Hundreds of protesters, many in hard hats and clutching makeshift shields, also gathered in the main city of Yangon, chanting slogans against military rule. Some set up barricades, and police used stun grenades and tear gas. Supporters of democracy have criticised Tuesday's intervention by ASEAN, which has a policy of non-interference in each other's affairs. A committee of ousted Myanmar lawmakers declared the junta a terrorist group and said engaging with it could give it legitimacy. At least 6 journalists have been arrested since the coup 1 month ago. Help, don't shoot me, says this Democratic Voice of Burma reporter, who live-streamed police firing near his apartment on Monday night before they seized him. The ouster has drawn condemnation and sanctions from the United States and other Western countries. Nobel Peace Laureate Suu Kyi appeared at a court hearing via video link on Monday and looked in good health, one of her lawyers said. She hasn't been seen in public since the coup.
That's Lucy Fielder of Reuters. Dutch police say an early morning blast has smashed windows at a coronavirus testing center in a small town north of Amsterdam. Nobody was hurt. Police in the North Holland province tweeted that, quote, an explosive went off, unquote, near the testing center in Boven Kasper just before 7 a.m. on Wednesday. German media outlets are reporting the country's domestic intelligence agency has put the opposition Alternative for German party under observation for suspected extreme right-wing sympathies. The move by the Federal Office of the Protection of the Constitution comes more than 2 years after it announced it was examining public comments by party members and links to extremist groups more closely. The Islamic State group has claimed responsibility for the killing of three women working for a local radio and TV station in eastern Afghanistan on Tuesday. The assault are the latest in a spike of targeted killings across the war-torn country. Dozens of people gathered on Wednesday for the funerals of the three. You are listening to International Edition on The Voice of America. I am Chinedu Ofor, broadcasting from Washington, D.C. Pope Francis said Wednesday he still expects to make his historic visit to Iraq in 2 days, despite a rocket attack on a military base hosting U.S.-led coalition troops. The Roman Catholic Pontiff asked for prayers for the trip, the first ever by a pope to Iraq, through which he hopes to encourage the dwindling Christian community to remain in their ancient homeland while broadening his outreach to Islam. At least 10 rockets slammed into a military base in western Iraq hosting U.S.-led coalition troops early on Wednesday, security sources said, leaving one civilian contractor dead. The attack on the sprawling Ayn al-Assad base in Iraq's western desert comes after several weeks of escalating U.S.-Iran tensions in Iraqi soil. On Tuesday, a spokesman for Francis said the Pope would be traveling by armored vehicle and that he would not be meeting crowds. When Islamic State fighters in 2014 advanced through the northern Iraqi city of Qorakhosh, one family fled the same night after burying their 9-year-old son, a casualty of the fighting. Now they and other Christian families are slowly returning home in time to welcome Pope Francis. VOA's Arash Arabasadi has this story.
Just a few years ago, a Christian prayer service here in this northern Iraqi city would have been unimaginable. In 2014, fighters from the Islamic State advanced through the city of Qorakhosh, changing the life of local resident Mazen Shemes.
A mortar shell fell on our house. My son, my brother's son, and our neighbor's child died.
Shemes, his family, and thousands of others fled for their lives. They stayed away for years while battles at home scarred the buildings and roads their families had known for generations. Father Amar Yako remembers seeing the Grand Immaculate Church, the biggest in Iraq, for the first time since the city's 2016 liberation from Islamic State.
In the end of 2016, I entered the town with the military forces that liberated it. We entered this church on October 25. It was completely burned and destroyed.
But then religious leaders began rebuilding. Archbishop Johanna Petros Muche and other leaders devised a plan to rebuild people's homes with funds from foreign Christian nonprofit groups.
We needed to rebuild the houses so that people come home. Only they are home. It is them who will rebuild the churches. This succeeded.
When we came back, we filed an application at the church. We went to Father George's, and they completed our house.
The Grand Immaculate Church is now mostly rebuilt, and Pope Francis is set to visit on March 7th. Iraq once had 1.5 million Christians, but in 20 years, that number has fallen to 300,000. Religious leaders say Shemes and his family rebuilding their home is another step in rebuilding a community driven away by violence and war. Arash Arabasadi, VOA News.
The World Food Program and the UN Refugee Agency are appealing for $266 million to restore full food rations for more than 3 million refugees in eastern Africa. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
Millions of refugees in camps across East Africa are not getting enough to eat. UN agencies have been forced to cut food rations in countries across the region because of a lack of cash. The most dramatic situation is in Rwanda, where refugees are having their food rations cut by 60%. In Uganda, which hosts the largest refugee population in Africa, the World Food Program has cut its food assistance to 1.27 million refugees by 40%. Other countries affected by severe funding shortages include Kenya, Tanzania, South Sudan, Djibouti, and Ethiopia. WFP spokesman Thompson Feary says refugees depend on humanitarian assistance to survive. WFP spokesman Thompson Feary says refugees depend on humanitarian assistance to survive. He says ration cuts have many serious knock-on effects that go beyond the health consequences of being deprived of critical nutritional needs.
When food is in short supply, protection concerns, including sexual and gender-based violence, increases in the camps. And this can also serve to significantly escalate tensions even within hosting areas.
The UN Refugee Agency says people who do not have enough to eat are forced to resort to so-called negative coping mechanisms to survive. UNHCR spokesman Boris Cheshirkov says the cuts in food aid are having dramatic consequences.
Already the cuts in food rations and cash are forcing people to skip or reduce meals, to sell off their belongings, and the risks are growing, including of child labor and domestic violence. People are already feeling desperate, and we need the support to ease their hardship.
The UN agencies warn of growing risks if food rations are not fully restored. They include increased malnutrition and anemia, stunted child growth, and a myriad of protection risks. They say the COVID-19 pandemic is compounding problems for refugee families. They note lockdowns and measures to contain the spread of the coronavirus have wiped out the ability of families to support themselves and find a way to put food on the table. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Media monitoring group Reporters Without Borders said Tuesday it had filed a criminal case with the German prosecutors targeting the Saudi Crown Prince and others for the killing in Turkey of journalist Jamal Khashoggi. Lisa Bryant reports from Paris.
The complaint alleges Saudi Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman and several top aides not only committed crimes against humanity against Saudi-born journalist Jamal Khashoggi, but are also responsible for what they say is widespread and systematic persecution of journalists in Saudi Arabia. The Paris-based Reporters Without Borders, or RSF, says it chose Germany because its laws allow prosecution for some crimes committed outside its borders. RSF's Director of International Campaigns, Rebecca Vincent, said the complaint also accuses the Saudi government of what it calls the arbitrary detention of dozens of journalists.
Well, we're hoping that this will start to chip away at impunity for these sorts of horrific crimes against journalists, and not just in Saudi Arabia, but elsewhere. So if this German court does take action, we believe that this could be truly game-changing and starting to chip away at that impunity.
Khashoggi, who was a columnist for the Washington Post newspaper, was killed at the Saudi consulate in Istanbul in 2018. Saudi Arabia denies the crown prince was involved, and a Saudi court sentenced others for Khashoggi's death. Both the U.S. Central Intelligence Agency and a U.N. special envoy have directly linked the crown prince to the killing. And the Biden administration recently released an unclassified intelligence report that concludes the crown prince, known as MBS, approved the operation to kill or capture the journalist.
I think the publication of the U.S. intelligence report just underscored further the need for actual, like, detailed information about what's happened and accountability.
If the German court fails to take up the case, Vincent said, RSF will continue to push for what it considers justice. A trial on Khashoggi's death is ongoing in Istanbul, and RSF is an observer in the court. Lisa Bryant for VOA News, Paris.
Longtime civil rights activist Vernon Jordan, a former advisor to President Clinton, has died. AP correspondent Mike Hempen reports.
Jordan's daughter, Vicki Jordan Adams, released a statement to CBS News saying her father died last night surrounded by loved ones. He was 85. Jordan was an unofficial aide in the Clinton White House, but before that, he was head of the National Urban League, becoming the face of Black America's modern struggle for jobs and justice. While in that high-profile position, he nearly died in 1980 when he was shot outside his hotel following a speaking engagement. He needed five surgeries and spent 3 months in the hospital recovering. I'm Mike Hempen.
That's it for our show today. For more in-depth and breaking news 24 hours a day, please visit voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Nadia Taha, and our managing editor, Kate Pound Dawson, I am Chinedu Afua in Washington. Thank you so much for listening, and have a great day.